Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Padavajakacharya, Satarata Sri Srimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. All glory, assembled devotees. All glory, assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 19, verse 33. Good. Entitled The Appearance of Shukadev Goswami. Please repeat after me. Yesham Samsmaranat Pumsham Yesham Samsmaranat Pumsham Sadhyaha Shudyanti Vai Grihaha Sadhyaha Shudyanti Vaigrihaha Kimpu Kim 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 Punar Darshana Sparsha Kim Punar Darshana Sparsha Pada Saucha sanadibihi Pada saucha sanadibihi Yesham samsmaranat pumsham Sadhyaha shudyanti vaigrihaha Kim punar darshanam sparsha Pada saucha sanadibihi Yesham samsmaranat pumsham Sadhyaha shudyanti vaigrihaha Kim punar darshanam sparsha Pada saucha sanadibihi Yesham samsmaranat pumsham Sadhyaha shudyanti vaigrihaha Kim punar darshana sparsha Pada saucha sanadibihi Others?
Thank you.
Please repeat after me. Yesham, of whom? Samsmaranat, by remembrance. Pumsham, of a person. Sadhyaha, instantly. Shudyanti, cleanses. Vai, certainly. Grihaha, all houses. Kim, what? Punaha, then. Darshana, meeting. Sparsha, touching. Pada, the feet. Saucha, washing. Asana adibihi, by offering a seat, etc. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat after me. Oh, actually, there's a translation. Don't repeat yet. Simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Please repeat after me. Simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The importance of the holy places of pilgrimage is due to the presence of great sages and saints. It is said that sinful persons go to the holy places and leave their sins there to accumulate. But the presence of the great saints disinfects the accumulated sins, and thus the holy places continue to remain sanctified by the grace of the devotees and saints present there. If such saints appear in the homes of worldly persons, certainly the accumulated sins of such worldly enjoyers become neutralized. Therefore, the holy saints actually have no self-interest with the householders. The only aim of such saints is to sanctify the houses of the householders And the householders therefore should feel grateful when such saints and sages appear at their doors. A householder who dishonors such holy orders is a great offender. It is enjoined, therefore, that a householder who does not bow down before a saint at once must undergo fasting for the day in order to neutralize the great offense. Om agyana timarandasya genanjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. I was born to the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So in this section of the Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj has understood that he's been cursed. Shamika Rishi sent word to the king that he is destined to die in 7 days. So he dropped everything and went to the bank of the Ganga to inquire what is the duty of a person, but specifically what is the duty of a man who is about to die. And the Srila Prabhupada points out that we could die at any moment. Old is just about to die. So if you died when you were 20, that means you were an old man at 19. Old means just about to die. It doesn't mean you have white hair. My great-grandmother lived 101, so when she had white hair, she had still had a long ways to go. By the way, everybody should turn their phones off. Turn off your phone, turn off your ringer. At least turn the ringer off. Otherwise, there's a 100 rupee fine. Pay the BBT. I'm sure Narahari will collect that fine. So, that's the etiquette in temple. You should turn your phone off. So he was inquiring, and so many sages came. Everybody came. Lists all the from the rishis from all over the universe came. His own father, Narada Muni came. Vyasadeva came. And then, finally, he was inquiring from all these people. But then finally, Shukadeva Goswami came. He was surrounded by a bunch of young children and women, also surrounded by women. And he was totally equipoised. He was on a completely off the bodily platform of life. He was completely transcendental. And he was friendly to everybody. He was smiling. He was kind. And they didn't understand who he was. They only, as soon as he appeared, when everybody started bowing down, when the king bowed down to him, when the rishis bowed down to him, then they realized that Shukadeva Goswami is this is not just some ordinary village boy. He may be cute, but he must be some great personality. If all the rishis of the universe are bowing down to him, Vyasadeva Narada Muni is bowing down to him, that he must be somebody special. So then they backed off. They left the children and the women. They left because they saw that they were involved in something which was way over their head. Way, way over their head. But you see, Shukadeva Goswami, he was not puffed up. He was, to them, he was just being friendly and nice to them. He wasn't proud or arrogant or anything with them. He behaved with them very nicely. He was humble. Now it's described here how in the verse and in the purport, it describes how when a saintly person comes to the home, how they are to be greeted. That washing of the feet. Now this is not just for some great, highly respectable person, practically anybody, any guest who comes to the home, Atithi de, you know, if an atithi comes, if an unexpected guest comes, then they should be given proper respect. This is because this is Krishna's culture. This is the type of culture that Krishna follows. Because he likes this culture. For example, when who was that? I just forgot. That Brahmin, Sudama. When Sudama Vipra came to his house, he was just a, you know, he was his classmate. He wasn't some big rishi or some, you know, king or some, you know, celebrated personality. He was just his school friend. Imagine if your schoolmate came to your house, right? But because he was a Brahmin, but Krishna got off his throne, you know, put him on the throne. His wives, he got his wives to fan him. In fact, if you read in the Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav, how Bhakti Siddhanta would treat any guest who came to the temple. Any guest who came to the temple, he had the brahmacharis on each side, one with a fan, one with a chamara, taking care of the guest. That's how Krishna would take care of any guest who came to his place. Of course, sometimes we have so many guests come, we can't do that. But any guests who come, Bhakti Siddhanta would have them, somebody stand there with a fan, fanning them. That's culture. Because this is the culture that Krishna follows. He would do that. He likes these type of things. Because he's humble. Krishna is very humble. He's an extremely humble person, very simple. It's like Shukadeva Goswami. He was so humble that the children and the foolish women, they describe, Vyasadeva calls them foolish women. I guess he called them foolish women because they didn't understand what kind of person, who he was, the greatness of this person. So he describes them as foolish women. But he didn't have any, he was not even the slightest pinch of arrogance in him. Similarly, Krishna is that way. Krishna is not an arrogant person. Krishna is very humble. He is, you know, his humility is heartbreaking, practically. You know, his when it's described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that when Gopal Kumar finally arrived in Vrindavan, and Krishna saw him, they ran to each other, and Krishna embraced him, and they began crying. And Krishna says, I have been looking down that path, waiting for you to, waiting, when were you going to give me your mercy and return? Like Krishna, he's thinking, when will you give me your mercy and come back? Not that he's going to give us his mercy, when we will give him our mercy. That's humility. Krishna is humble. He's very humble. So this is how he likes to treat people. He likes to treat people nicely. You know. Of course, in Krishna's case, however way he treats you is for your benefit. Whether he kills you, like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, so many people were killed, or if he's, you know, has his wives fanning you, you get the same benefit. But so we also should try to learn this culture. In this, you know, the Varna Ashram is the culture that Krishna follows. You know, in a simplified form, but these other things like, you know, because bhakti is the pure process, the pure part of Vedic culture. For other, you know, like jnanis and karmakandis and the extras are attached to it, which we don't have to follow. But the main portion of Varna Ashram, this is the culture that Krishna follows. He's a, in Goloka, he's a Vaishya, right? And all the older gopas, they're grihastas. And you can't have parakiya rasa unless there's grihastha ashram. There has to be sakya before you can have parakiya. So all these things are there. Right? So in this verse also, Srila Prabhupada said, when a great saintly person, in this case it's not just an ordinary person, an ordinary guest should be treated, atiti deva bhava. Matrudeva Bhava, Pitrudeva Bhava, and Atithi Deva Bhava. Mother is as good as God, father is as good as God, and the guest is as good as God. When it's described, Manu explains that Atithi means a respectable person who comes to your house and he doesn't know how long he'll stay. Maybe I'll stay this long, or maybe I'm not sure. Atithi. I'm not how long exactly I'll stay. That's Atithi. He's as good as God. So what to speak of a great, self-realized soul, Shukadev Goswami, son of Vyasadev. Even Vyasadev is paying respects to him. His own father is paying obeisance to him. Is embracing, greeting him with great respect, giving him, he is going to be the president of the assembly. How much respect, all these, Bhrigu Rishi, Vashishta, Vishvamitras, there's a whole list is given of who's there. It's like everybody who's ever been mentioned in the Shastras is there. Narada Muni is the guru of everybody. Guru of Valmiki, the guru of Vyasadeva, the guru of Dhruva, Prahlad. He's the guru. I don't think there's anybody that Narada Muni is not the guru of. Is there somebody, some great personality of whom Narada Muni is not their guru? So even he is giving with great respect to Shukadev Goswami. And when such great personalities come to your home, then he describes how they should be greeted. But these days, it's going to be pretty rare that Shukadev Goswami is going to come to your house, or some great rishi is going to come to your house, right? So, but actually, that's not true, because this being the book marathon, he will come to your house because he comes in this form, right? As is described at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the rishis, the sages are worried that since Krishna has left the planet, how will people take shelter? How will they get deliverance? What will be the guide? And it's described that at the Bhagavatam, there will be the guide. And so, if we give the Bhagavatam or the Gita or any Prabhupada's books, it will be just as good for them as if Shukadev Goswami comes to us, because it is not different. Not different from Krishna. So when you give, you sell somebody Bhagavatam or Krishna or the Gita, you are giving them Vyasadev, Narada Muni, Shukadev Goswami, Parikshit, everybody. Because they are real. It's transcendental. It's not some ordinary book. It's not like, some novel, Gone with the Wind, or, completely forgettable literature. You read it once and that's it, like a newspaper. After you read it, you line the bottom of your birdcage with it. That is, it's not very useful. But the Bhagavatam or the Gita, any Shastra, transcendental literature, that if you read it and then, you come back and you read it again, it's fresh again. It's like you get some new realizations from it, because it is alive. It is living. It's living. It is that's why it's transcendental, because it is identical with Krishna. So we, it's our duty all the time to be bringing these great personalities into the lives of other people. Because in the mood of Lord Chaitanya, I was just hearing one class how Advaita Acharya, he is Mahavishnu, right? So he's saying, I can't save these people because Krishna made He said, if you surrender unto me, then I'll deliver you. But there's a catch. You have to surrender first. Right? If you don't surrender, I won't do anything. If you surrender, then I will deliver you. So therefore he said, since they're not surrendering, I'm not delivering. So he prayed that Lord Chaitanya should come. Because Lord Chaitanya doesn't wait till you surrender. You know, like in the case when Advaita Acharya, because he didn't like being treated with respect by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya always, you know, paid obeisance to him. He wanted to be treated differently by Lord Chaitanya. So therefore he hatched the plot that he would begin to preach Mayavad philosophy. So he began preaching from the Adhyatmaka Ramayana, the Vishishta, was it? Something like that. I think it's a Mayavad and some Mayavad Shastra. Anyway, so Lord Chaitanya came. He heard about this. He grabbed him by the hair, dragged him, and began beating him. And Advaita Acharya was very happy. Finally, you're giving me some. So he wasn't waiting till Advaita Acharya surrendered. He immediately grabbed him and started beating him to show him the way. Because Krishna, Sanatan Goswami, he prays to Krishna, you are a cowherd boy. Right? So cowherd boys, they carry sticks. Right? What is the stick for? If the cow goes off the path, he gives it a hit. It goes one way or the other way, keeps the cow going in a straight line. So he's praying that, oh, Krishna, you please, you take your stick and you beat me and you keep me going off the path. Like that. Keep me going in a straight line. So that's what Lord Chaitanya, he's not waiting until you surrender. He's coming to deliver you. So we are the servants of Lord Chaitanya. So it's our duty to bring all these great personalities into the lives of people. Because just by a moment's association, yeah, sadhu sangha, okay, he has a fine. His phone was on. He has to pay a fine. 100 rupees. You write it down in your book there. I was not kidding. So, what was I saying? We have to bring these. Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi. So, if they just for a moment, all the Shastras say that the association with sadhus is the most important thing. That even. All the Shastras say that even if you get a Lava Matra, Lava Matram is 8/5 of a second. That means 1 3/8 of a second. If there's that much association with a sadhu, then your life will become perfect. Sarva Siddhi. You'll get all perfection in life. And how is that? Well, it may not be instantaneous. Just for example, like suppose you have associate with a snake. Cobra. The bite only lasts for 1 second. But the effect, you know, accrues and then you die. They only needed 1 second association to get the effect. Over time. Hours, days, weeks, or however long it takes for the poison to go through the body, then you die. So, sometimes Prabhupada is described that Krishna consciousness is like a poison. It's the poison of material life. It kills material life. Right? So just that moment association injects you with the poison which kills material life. It may take some time, but only takes 1 second to inject. So just give them these books. Right? So I thought I would describe some of the incidences, you could say, in some future Purana, these incidences will be mentioned about how these books transform the lives of people. About 30 years ago, 30, 32 years ago, in the very early 80s, in France, devotees, it's the Gita Jayanti Marathon, but in the West, it was the Christmas Marathon, we called it the Christmas Marathon. So they were distributing books in the train stations. So they would go just before the trains left, they'd get on the train and distribute books. So in this one case, there's one young girl, around 20 years old, very pretty girl, very delicate features. Like that. So she was very expert in book distribution. So she would get on the train. So she got on this train, this train was going to Madrid, from Paris to Madrid. So she got on the train, and she went to this one man. As soon as he gave him a Krishna book, so he got the Krishna book, he became very angry. And he was so angry, he took the Krishna book and he was so strong, he tore it practically in half. Then he put it on the ground, threw it on the ground, he started jumping on it, up and down, shouting at the girl. Then he grabbed her by the hair and dragged her through the compartment. And the train was moving by this time, and he threw her off the train onto the platform. She landed on her face. Her blood was coming, she dislocated her shoulder. She was seriously injured. All the devotees came. They were cursing this man. Cursing him. They were just cursing this demon. And she was hospitalized for 4 days, but it was the marathon. After 4 days later, she was back, back distributing books. So this man took him to, trained from Paris to Madrid. When he got to Madrid, he was a big banker, very wealthy man, and also arrogant with his wealth. He got there, and he brought the book home. Showed it to his wife. Look what I did to this foolish, stupid girl. Goodness, and he left the book on the table. His wife had to go do some shopping. He had to go to the office, and the maid came. She didn't know what happened. She thought this was some book that belonged to the family, maybe that somebody drove over with a car. She took the book and she fixed it as good as she could. She went in his office and she put it on the bookshelf. About a year later, the man had a major catastrophe. His wife was killed in a head-on collision. His son became a drug addict. And his daughter married some low-life guy. But he was completely shattered that his wife had died. Suddenly, no warning. Not like somebody's got cancer and they've been laying in bed for a year. It's not going to be a shock if the person dies. But just suddenly, out of the blue, the wife dies. Very much in love with his wife. So he was completely desperate. Completely desperate. So he was in his office, and he was, actually contemplating suicide. And he looked up, and he's actually looking for the Bible. Then he saw the book, this book, Krishna book. So he got inspired. He pulled it down, and he began reading it. And he was reading about how, I think it was Vasudev was explaining how the soul after the body dies, the soul continues on, just like the whole explanation of reincarnation, just like how the worm, the inchworm, it puts the front forward before it goes in the next place, like the inchworm. And by reading that, he felt some solace in his heart, that he knew that his wife, her body had died, she had continued. So he felt some peace, and then he went to bed. And then the next day, he didn't go to work, he just stayed home for 3 or 4 days and just read. He's just read the complete Krishna book. He felt so much, peace at heart, knowing this from the knowledge there. So the book was in French, but he could read French. So he looked in the back. There's the address to the. He called up the Paris Temple, And the Paris temple gave him the address of the local temple in Madrid. So he went to the. He decided to go. Came in, you know, businessman, pucker businessman, beautiful, you know, $5,000 suit or something like that. And he shows up at the temple of the in Madrid. And when the temple president opens the door, there's this man on his hands and knees crying. He's crying. And the temple, the new man, new temple president, didn't know what to make of this, but you know, but this, he could tell by the suit that this was a very wealthy person. And he was asked, "So, what, can I help you?" And the man began to cry. He says, "Well, you know, actually, this girl, you know, one of your people gave me this book. I destroyed. Here, the book was in his hand. I destroyed the book, and I was so rough with that girl. I didn't understand she was trying to help me." And so the temple president called him in, you know, and he explained more. And then, "Is there anything I can do? Is there anything I can do?" And the temple president didn't even know. So then he pulled out, didn't know, the temple president was just a new temple president, so he didn't know what to say. And so the man just pulled out a checkbook, said, "Let me write you a check." So he wrote a very big check, you know, for a large amount of money. Then, that was like on a Wednesday. But then, on the Sunday, when the temple president was giving the class, he noticed at the back of the class, back of the room, was this man. This banker was there. And every Sunday, he would come. And after a while, because his family, his wife is dead, his daughter, his son was a druggie, and his daughter was gone, so he decided he wanted to join the temple. He joined the temple. So they gave him the service. They made him the treasurer. Because he was a banker. Very affluent. So then, after some time, so then the Christmas marathon came out, and then he asked, "Could I also distribute books?" I thought, well, he's older guy, you know, he's late 40 or something like that. But okay, they gave him a chance, and he did pretty good. He distributed, so he became a full-time book distributor. And a couple of years later, because the zone included Italy. So a couple of years later, they had a big festival in Italy where all the devotees came. And so he also came and he met that girl who he had beaten. And of course, on his knees, you know, he begged her forgiveness for what he had done. But of course, naturally, seeing him shaved up as a devotee, she forgave him. But it just shows that even somebody how sinful can you get? He tore the Bible, he tore the Krishna book in half, jumped up and down, beat the, threw her off the train. He almost killed her. It's such a person because, you know, he actually touched the book. He touched the book, and he actually, when you know, in his time of need, when he was, you know, four types of people approach Krishna. Those who are in distress. So he was very distressed, and he took shelter. He was able to, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, because the devotees, they're servants of Lord Chaitanya. He was able to completely transform. Totally transform. This is one of my god sisters in Colorado. She told a similar story about how this one, she used to sell books in the airport, and there's one woman who used to buy the books and throw them in the garbage. She says, "I buy them just so I can throw them in the garbage." She's such a nasty lady. She would buy a book just to throw it in front of the devotee, throw it in the garbage. Imagine what kind of a person that is. But then she went back to the temple, and then later she saw that this woman was coming to the Govinda's restaurant and said, "Don't! I'm not here for religious. Is this the food? I like the food. I like the food." But then, prasadam has its way, you know. So this woman kept eating prasadam. And next thing, after some time, this woman who was used to, who's throwing the Gitas in the garbage herself, became a devotee. You know. And Shiva Ramaswamy also tells a very interesting story, how this one young girl wrote a letter to Shiva Ramaswamy, like sometime in like 1994 or something like that, about what happened in her family. When she was, some devotees came, had come to, this is in Hungary, a small little city in Hungary. I guess it was still during under communism. It's a little bit dangerous. It's like in the 90s. Communism was over then. Communism ended like in 91, I think, right? 19 or something like that. 10 years after, yeah, 90, but just at the end of communism. So the devotees went to do some program there, some kirtan program like that. And so this girl, she was about 12 or something like that. She bought a book. She's not a reader, but she bought the book. Maybe because of the influence of the kirtan, she said. So she bought the book, Science of Self-Realization in Hungarian. She brought it home. And she just put it in her room. She didn't even think about it. She just didn't even think about reading it. And her mother found the book. And they were, mother started chastising her. This is some, because they were very staunch Catholics. This is some sort of cult book like this. You know, and the grandmother saw it. And the grandmother started really chastising her, But, that girl didn't think anything of it because she's a teenage girl. And she never read the book anyhow. So, that way she just forgot about the whole thing. But a week later, she overheard her grandmother talking to her mother and saying, actually, this is a very special book. Because the grandmother read the book. This is a very special book, this Prabhupada, he says everything that Jesus said, everything that Jesus says is in this book. We're better explained. And he started talking about how Christianity, nobody's following Christianity anymore and this and that, Then she began to follow like that, the grandmother. She said everybody should, the grandmother got everybody following. And then one day, after she used to spend her pension, she'd go and buy one volume of the Bhagavatam one at a time. Sometimes she'd only be living on a few potatoes, hardly any money. She was just, she was like in her 68 or 70, something like that. And one day, one night she had a dream of Prabhupada, and it totally transformed her. She made the whole family, her daughters, her sons, all her grandchildren, the wives, everybody. They all had to chant at least one round a day. And they only could eat prasadam. And even the dog had to become a vegetarian. The dog had to become a vegetarian. Because he could only get prasad, And she would go, the grandmother would... the grandmother would sometimes in front of pictures of Krishna, she'd see the grandmother crying while she's chanting japa. She transformed her whole room into a temple. And she'd get all her family to go out and distribute books. And how the grandmother was completely, she made everybody, she'd go to the markets, make everybody buy books. She was completely fearless. The granddaughter described her as a transcendental terror. who's going to say no to an old babushka, like an old grandmother? She's so firm in her conviction, and she wanted her whole life goal was that she wanted to go to the capital of Hungary, Budapest, because she had heard that God had come, that Gorni Thai deities had been established, that she had complete faith that this was God. Just from reading Prabhupada's books. And converted the whole family. Just from reading, coming in contact with Prabhupada and his science of self-realization. We don't know the potency of these books. They were going to throw the book away. And speaking of, this is in the former Soviet Union, Hungary. In the 80s, in the early 80s, when we were living in Calcutta, we were having a program of the devotees would go into Soviet Union and they'd get telephone books. And they'd smuggle the telephone books out of Russia, out of the Soviet Union, and bring them to India. What we do in Calcutta, we get all the addresses, right? So we get envelopes and we put addresses, from Leningrad, this is now St. Petersburg, you know, and Moscow, and all these different cities. We get, and then we'd have the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita. We had it translated into Russian. And we put it into all these envelopes, and then we put stamps, and then we send it to all different cities of India and mail them to Russia. Because we didn't want them all coming from Calcutta. We sent them from all different parts of India, mailing them to the Soviet Union. Because we didn't know who they were going to. Could have been going to the KGB, could have been going to who knows who. We didn't know who they were going to. We just shooting like that. So this one Russian devotee was telling a story about how what the effects of the, you know, of the preaching was on from that side. Because he was after the Afghanis, he was a veteran from the Afghani war. So after the Afghanistan war, he didn't want to, he wanted a very peaceful life. So he decided to become some sort of law training. But that was all taken care of by the KGB. He didn't want to be a KGB agent. He didn't want to be a spy, but he had to work in the same place. So he was doing some research on narcotics, narco addiction. He had to go to do the research, he had to go into this library. And there he got, you know, he got into the occult. He wanted to really find out about the occult. Now he had access to so many secrets. So he wanted to find out about occultism, you know. So he had, so then there was like, you know, whole sections for Christianity, whole section for Islam, and a whole big section just for ISKCON. A whole department just for ISKCON. You know, so he was like very intrigued, you know, and he was talking to the librarian. He says, "Oh, these Hare Krishnas, they are the worst. They are the worst." You know, they had a film of some ISKCON devotee in Pakistan being beaten. Says, and even though he was being beaten, he was still chanting Hare Krishna. Just see, he's being beaten and he won't stop chanting that mantra. The KGB was saying, these people are fanatics. Even though he's being beaten, he won't stop chanting the mantra. And how they were complaining about his father, or one of his associates, his father was a captain in a sea, ocean-going vessel. And they were exporting items, you know, to different places, meaning weapons to Vietnam, weapons to different countries. They were like that, you know, arms trade. Because, you know, the Soviets were doing like that. But every time they would go into some port, like in Germany, like they have to stop some different ports, especially in Scandinavia, on the way back, that the devotees would somehow get onto the boats and put books everywhere. Stick them under the cupboards, everywhere. The captain had gone for a half an hour. He said when he came back, they found 20, like a couple of dozen books had already been stashed on the boat somehow. And he was like furious. Even under his bed, he was finding books. And the KGB were saying that these books, they had even lost a few agents to these books. He said one of his mentors had explained how about one of the agents who was in a country, who was an undercover agent, and what happened to him. He was supposed to go to some meeting, and the meeting, you know, you have to be on time. If you're not on time, because it's like, you know, the spy operations and the whole thing goes wrong, then, you know, it's crucial you make your meeting on time. And he had another agent who was covering him, who was following him. And you're not supposed to be diverted for anything. On his way to the meeting, he saw this gang of people beating up two people. They're beating two devotees. And they're not just like, they're beating them seriously, really beating them. So you're supposed to just keep going. But this agent, for some reason, was inspired and he went and he attacked these aggressors. And, you know, these KGB agents are heavily trained. You know, teeth were flying, you know, heads were being smashed, blood was flowing, you know, and he rescued them. Then he just wanted to leave, but the devotees were following him, you know, please stop. They wanted to give him a gift. So finally, just to get rid of them, he took the book. He took a book from them, you know. And then his other agent said, what did you do that for? You're not, you know, this, you broke the rules. You're not supposed to stop. You're not supposed to be diverted. You're supposed to go. Why did you do that? You could be punished for doing that. He says, well, I don't know. I just couldn't stand the thought. I just couldn't stand seeing these two boys being beaten like that. And somehow I was just inspired. Anyway, he made it to the meeting on time. Made it to the meeting on time. But then after some time, the agent who had gotten the book became sort of paranoid. And he was telling his co-agent, you know, that I feel I'm being followed. People are following me around and, you know, I'm in a lot of anxiety like that. And where his co-agent didn't think that there was any problem. But then he contacted Moscow and he found actually they are after him. That we had found out from many sources that they're after him. And then, but when he went back into the room, there was like a glass. He saw the other agent. He had put the Gita on the sofa, and he was on his hands and he was on his knees, and he was praying because he had read that book, you know, because the KGB had said they had lost many agents to these books. They had found the books and started reading them, and then they were lost. So he saw him praying to the Gita. You know, praying and making on, and you know. So he didn't. So the other agent was wondering, what is going on? Is this guy crazy? Is he pretending to be a Krishna? He didn't know what he was doing. So then the KGB ordered that one agent back to Moscow because they didn't want both agents to be caught. So then he was ordered to go find him again after a few months, and you know, he looking around, finding, they couldn't find him. But then he found his neighbors, and neighbors said, well, actually, he came back. But he'd become totally changed. He wouldn't. When we offered him drinks, he wouldn't take any drinks. When we offered him meat, he wouldn't take any meat. And then he came, the last time he came, he had a shaved head. He had joined the local temple. Like that, you know. So these books are extremely powerful. We don't know what effects, you know, and what the effect and the future will be for other people. We have to just put them out there and see, you know, just keep putting them out there. They have an effect. You know, you could see on the... like my wife also, she said how her father bought her... as a gift, Science of Self-Revelation, was going to give it to his daughter, my wife. I have no interest in get rid of this. You know, I have no interest in this at all. But then, sometime later, her father began telling her the story of, you know, liquid beauty. You know, that, and it was so profound. So my wife said, well, where did you get that? So, well, from that book you didn't want to read. Well, give me that book. Give me that book. So then she began to read it. You know, then she actually, after she started reading it, she got her father to become a devotee. She read the whole set of Bhagavatams before she joined the temple. Like that. So, what's the time? Okay. So, we have these books. Now, it's not just our business to sell the books. You know, we should read the books ourselves. We should live the books, and then we should distribute the books. Of course, you could, while you're reading them, you can also be distributing them. But we have to, as Prabhupada, he didn't write these books for us to sell them. He wrote the books for us to read them. You know, otherwise, we won't know what we're doing. It's not just a money-making operation, something that we sell. We have to read these books because they'll have a profound impact on us as well. And that's the whole point, is that we have a change of heart. It's meant to create a revolution in the heart of impious people. It's the beginning of the Bhagavatam. That is the meant. That means us. That's not somebody else. That's us. We didn't fall off, you know. We didn't. There's no like landing pad for Vaikuntha airplanes outside, you know. We are the ones who have to read these books. Oh, and yesterday, the owner of the Garuda Mall agreed that we can distribute books in the Garuda Mall. So we have to finalize the procedures sometime this week, another place we can distribute books. He said, well, if I let you, this is about the third or fourth time I asked him. So he said, well, if I let you distribute books, and other groups also, they'll also want to distribute. Well, I don't care if Muslims distribute Gitas. I don't care if the Christians distribute Gitas. Then he said, okay, he agreed. So now we have to meet with him this week. Otherwise, the devotee just can't show up. We have to have some sort of... Huh?
Survival of the fittest.
What do you mean?
Survival of the fittest.
Right.
It's gone, it's fit. Now we'll be able to survive.
Yeah, I guess so.